Al Horford, two for two, and a steal.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The game on lock for sure.
Tatum had a look, doesn't take it, steps into 17 feet, and knocks down the first shot of Game 7. Long lead pass gets to Tatum. He spins away from traffic and hits a three. Tatum shakes off Thompson, loses him, and thrills the baseline jumper.
No, that'll get you a timeout. Somebody get off my toe. Jason Taylor.
Kick to the corner. Morris waiting. Three. Got it.
That was nicely done. Kick inside, outside, move the basketball.
Celtics by 12, 35-23. Jeff Green jumps over Baines, scored on the foul. Jeff Green with a three-point play has tied Game 7 with 6:51 remaining in the third quarter. LeBron steps to the line, left-hand dribble, in traffic, falling away, banks it home. Brilliant. Tatum, left-hand dribble, drives on, flushes hard on LeBron James. He couldn't block that one.
Dang.
Smart, shovels to Tatum, up fake, steps to his left, fall away, three, got it!
No! Where's the nurse at when you need her? Where is she?
The Celtics have the lead in Game 7, and it's Jason Tatum who has led them there. 72-71. And Ty Lue using a second timeout. That's about LeBron.
Well, yeah.
That's just going to give LeBron some more rest. Celtics down three. 3:27 to go in Game 7. Bounce entry, Morris against Hill. Isolated. Double team comes from Jeff Green. Kick out. Swung around to Horford for three. No good. Back iron. Rebound, George Hill. And the Celtics are 6 of 32 from distance in Game 7.
Getting their looks.
LeBron has got it. He will race into the front court against Marcus Morris. LeBron fights through. Goaltend. And the foul. And LeBron James is going to take a team that no one believed in and bring them back to the NBA Finals.
Every ending is tough, you know, and I guess that's for all 29 teams that don't win it. No matter how good of a season you've had, the ones that don't end with you winning a championship, just, you know, it's going to be a disappointing ending.
Well, a disappointing end in Game 7 Eastern Conference Finals at home, where the Celtics had been flat-out dominant for stretches in this postseason, but they fall to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals. So you had your column about a week ago, Chris, that I disagreed with, that it would have been a big disappointment if the Celtics ended up losing that series, because you referred to house money that they were playing with being up 2-0.
Yeah.
To me,
and being the better team, which I thought they were.
And overall, yes, they were the better team because it's LeBron and a collection of bums, and we're continuing to see that now.
Talk about the wheel of bums.
Even in the finals.
Ty Lue spinning that thing like crazy.
That poor guy. He's aged 30 years in the last 3 months. All that being said, I disagreed in that because to me, the only thing that would have been a massive disappointment was if they lost that first series against the Bucks. Beyond that, anything to me was gravy. And so I was just, in a way, I was happy for them to be there. Okay, they were the better team. They're up 2-0. They end up blowing this thing. They blow it at home. So while I don't think a disappointment overall, Game 7 in a vacuum was a massive, massive disappointment. Hopefully I'm not contradicting myself too much
I think I understand
there.
What you're saying. I mean, again,
it's just the way that it played out, and especially that second half, Chris. Like, they went away from everything that they were doing. Why did they go away from Jason Tatum in that fourth quarter where, you know, he's got the three, he's got the dunk, he stares in LeBron's face, and then he doesn't touch the ball for the remaining, like, 6 minutes. It made absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where when you look at it, the way that they play actually worked against them, I think, a little bit in that fourth quarter, Jim, because they're a team that looks at things and says, okay, we have a multitude of options. There's no one go-to guy here without Kyrie. And I think that in that fourth quarter, you really needed to funnel the offense through Tatum, but that's not the way that they're built. And that wasn't their strength throughout the playoffs. You know, their strength was the idea that they had a diversified offense and that on any night it could be a different guy. You know, one night it's Terry Rozier's the guy. The next night it's Al Horford.
Or Marcus Morris.
The next night it's Jaylen Brown. Then it's Jason Tatum. And I think down the stretch there, another team would have been like, this guy touches the ball every time down the floor and we run everything through him. And that's just not the way that they played without Kyrie. And I think that sort of hurt them. But in that moment, it's hard for you to go away from what your ethos is and what got you to that point.
Do you agree with what Brad Stevens said after the game and that the game was ultimately lost in the second quarter? I thought that it was. I was happy to actually hear him say that after the game because if they get that score, the differential to around 17, LeBron and the Cavs are going to check out You had them teetering, and you let them off the hook.
I agree.
And that's where that game was ultimately lost. Okay, the fourth quarter, it was way too many threes. Terry Rozier shooting way too much. Their backcourt could have lost it. You know, you could argue they lost it for them. But they didn't really pour it on, and they let them off the hook in the second quarter. That, to me, is ultimately where they lost.
Yeah, because, again, it's like it's human nature, right? I mean, you've drilled them three times in your building. They know that. And they're down 12 in the second quarter. George Hill's a ghost once again. They don't have Kevin Love. I mean, it would have been pretty easy for it to become Operation Checkout. And they crawled back into it and got some confidence. And, you know, they ended the credit to them. They pulled it out. But you let them off the hook. And so to go back to the disappointment thing, here's my thought on it. And I felt like more people sort of came to my side after the thing was over. What was frustrating for me was sort of Celtics fans and media looking at it and saying, well, the Celtics are the better team. If they win this series, they're deserving. Okay, I agree with you. Absolutely. But if they lose the series, oh, it's all gravy. I've never heard of that. I've never heard of a better team losing a series. And it's like, well, they weren't supposed to win it anyway, even though they're the better team. It's like you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand what the expectations were for all of us when we started these playoffs. But that team told you from the beginning that those guys were defiant, and they said, we have enough talent to contend and compete. And you know what? They were right. And those of us who thought they didn't have enough talent, like me, were wrong. But then when you get there, and you're up 2-0, and you're blowing them out, and you're up 3-2, and you're in a situation where Game 7's in your building, you got to win that. I'm sorry, you do. You got to win that. Like, there's no excuses at that point. Like, you can't win the series, and then we all say, okay, they were the better team, even without Kyrie and Hayward. They were deeper. They were more athletic. LeBron's a bum. The guys he plays with are bums. And, you know, the Celtics are the best, and they won. And then you lose the series. Oh, LeBron didn't really beat anybody. You know, we didn't have Kyrie. We didn't have Hayward. LeBron didn't really do anything. I mean, to me, this series, more than anything, showed just how deep and how rampant the dislike for LeBron James is in Boston. He gets credit for, like, there's no way. Like, he's not going to get credit for anything.
You were surprised by that?
I was surprised that it's at this level, at this point in his career. Like, I don't expect people to cheer the guy on, but it's to a point where, like, you won't even acknowledge any of his, like, nobody even will acknowledge sort of the idea of what he accomplished in winning the series. It's like, oh, this Celtics team he beat didn't have anybody. But, oh, by the way, we're the better, deeper team. And if we won, like, we totally deserved it. And we would have taken down LeBron and, like, ended his reign because we're the best. But he didn't beat anybody.
Oh, no. I think it's an incredible accomplishment that he got to the finals with this team. And even though I referred to his
team, air quotes, team.
Even though I referred to his 51 in game one of the finals as a bit of a soft 51 because he got cold in the end of the third quarter. Like, I respect the player. It's all the off-court stuff that drives me a little bit crazy with the guy. I think he's too much of an egomaniac. But he is, you know, one of the great talents in the history of the game. That's a fact. And so after game six, which was a week ago Friday.
Yeah.
And as bad as the, you know, it's funny, like, figures, Terry Rozier plays his ass off on the road in that game. He's the best player in the Celtics, and him and Brown go off, but it's a terrible game for Al Horford. But, you know, it was a great night for LeBron, and I was kind of surprised. It's like people, you know, have short memories. The Cavs tie that series, the fourth of game seven. People were like, fine. Nah, the Celtics, they've been so dominant at home, they'll be all right. We got this in the bag. Like, you weren't worried that LeBron was going to be dominant again in game seven? Like, he flipped that switch back in 2012 in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals. After that, you couldn't doubt that guy's prowess anymore, but people still did. They just don't want to give him credit. You're right. Ultimately, though, who was the biggest disappointment for you?
In Game 7 or in the series?
In the series for the Celtics, including Game 7.
That's a tough one. Biggest disappointment? I mean, you know, it's hard because I think what lingers for you is what happened in Game 7. So I'll probably go with Terry Rozier as the biggest disappointment. I mean, obviously, 0 for 10 from 3 is something that leaves a mark. And the other reason I'll say that, Jim, is I felt like he had the advantage in that series over George Hill. And he needed to outplay George Hill in that series. And I thought, you know, for a good chunk of it, he did. But when it really, really mattered, he didn't. I mean, I'm just looking at the stats now. He shot in the series 25% from 3. 25.5% from 3. 37.8% from the field. They needed more than that because I thought that was advantage Celtics against George Hill.
Yeah, it's Rozier for me. As good as he was in Game 6, and I you know, it's like he made a deal with the devil to have that game, especially on the road. He was so brutal in Game 7. And then the comments afterwards, too, I'm paraphrasing, but he was like, well, I got my T-shirt or the nickname, whatever it was. Like, he came off to me as a little too Isaiah Thomas-y. Stupid really? Nickname that spawned the equally stupid T-shirts, overrated by a segment of dumb fans, inflated view of himself, lacks self-awareness, and he's a point guard. Yeah, gee, I wonder why he reminded me of Isaiah Thomas after this. Like, he just, I don't know, he drove me nuts. I hope that they trade him this offseason, as long as the deal is good. I don't know if he's going to be willing to be a bench guy behind Kyrie next season, Chris. I think.
Well, he said he would do it. I mean, he has said.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think it's more the I think he wants to be here. I think it's going to be more the Celtics trying to sell high on the Terry Rozier experience at this point than him not wanting to be here. And, you know, I think he very deeply cared about losing this series. I don't think he was like, oh, I'm just happy I sold my T-shirts and stuff. I mean, I think he felt, you know, Jimmy had sort of mentioned something to me the other day about Rozier being upset about losing the series and feeling that he'd let guys down and let the team down. He cares.
Jimmy should tell us more about what he hears behind the scenes and all his Celtics gossip. I don't know who he talks to, and he's never going to tell us.
I'll tell you what, and just being around being around Rozier for the playoffs the way I would not put him in the class of guy who was just like, oh, that was a great run. I sold my T-shirts. Like, that guy cares. He really does, and he's a competitor. I like that about him.
Well, it's disappointing that the Celtics didn't make the finals, of course, but there is one bright, almost blinding, shining silver lining from this postseason, so we're going to get to that coming up next year. Sports Hub Celtics Show, you want to join us, 617-779-0985.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on the home of the seas, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Take us with you on your phone with the TuneIn app.
That's too easy right there.
It's the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, just an amazing, you know, ride that we had and how much fun it was playing with, you know, these group of guys, you know, night in and night out playing, you know, for our coaching staff and, you know, just, you know, I would have went to war with any of those guys on our team any day. You know, I knew that we were going to give it our all, you know, every single night, no matter what the circumstance was and the entire season, you know, we showed that and, you know, like Al said, we have nothing to hang our head about. We left it all on the floor, and, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 is Sports Hub. Big Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you at 617-779-0985. So as disappointing as it is, Chris, that the Celtics came up short in the Eastern Conference Finals, if nothing else, we do know that they have a certified stud on their hands. That was Celtics rookie Jason Tatum after he was selected third overall in last year's draft. He started in all but two of the Celtics' 82 regular season games, and then in this playoff run, my God, I remember, you know, going into that Milwaukee series, all we really wanted, even if they fell short in that, was show me something here from Brown and Tatum,
but
especially Tatum. Show me what I've seen here isn't a mirage in the regular season. Show me that this kid isn't going to wilt in this big moment here in the playoffs. He started in all 19 playoff games, finished as your leading scorer, averaged 18.5 a game. For most of the postseason, until really the end, Al Horford might have been their best player overall, but it was Tatum. It was Tatum. Tatum was their best player this postseason, so okay, disappointing that they're not in the finals here and get their ass kicked by the Golden State Warriors, but if nothing else, you know that Tatum belongs.
Yeah, big picture, 30,000-foot view, absolutely. I mean, the playoffs were a success when you look at the way their young guys perform. Jason Tatum, he made the leap. I thought Jaylen Brown was very good. I know he wasn't very good in Game 7, but I thought he was really good. Some 30-point games throughout the course of the playoffs, and I thought he showed something when he fought through the hamstring in the Philly series and came back and made an impact. And Rozier was good. Definitely bumped up his trade value there. So you have to feel pretty good about it if you're the Celtics moving forward. And I think it shifts the offseason. Now, look, we all know, you know, Danny Ainge. He's going to explore every available opportunity to augment and improve this team. Nothing will dissuade him from doing that. But I think it plants the seed in his mind, and I know he has said publicly, you know, he just expects tweaks. You look at it and you say, you know what, to compete with Golden State, I don't need to go get Kawhi Leonard. Let's see what we can do when we have our entire team intact.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that this run might have shifted the perspective of the brass in that they might be more willing to just stand pat and not try to make any kind of home run move like that, which I'm good with. I think that they should basically stand pat.
Yeah, I mean,
you
look,
a little bit.
If Anthony Davis or Karl Anthony Towns is going to shake loose, that's different to me because those guys are elite players that happen to have size, and I think that's difficult to find, and it would change the dynamic of your team. Sure, go ahead, make a move. You know, get one of those guys. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns is young. You know, we're not talking about somebody who's 27 years old like Kawhi Leonard. You're talking about somebody who hasn't even hit the prime of their career yet. So go do that. But, I mean, short of that, I feel like you sort of owe it to this core to see what they can do.
All right, your leftover thoughts about Game 7 and this Celtics season here. I guess a requiem for the Celtics 2017-18 season, if you will, here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. You're going to join us, 617-779-0985. Ryan in Manchester, you're first up here on the show. Hey, Ryan.
You guys are blowing my mind that you think Terry Rozier was worse than Jaylen Brown in Game 7. Jaylen Brown was the polar opposite in this series. He had one good game than Jason Tatum. He got his lunch eaten by Kyle Korver. On TNT or whatever it was on, they had to look in the history books. He got rejected two or three times in one game by Kyle Korver. Guys, I've gone back and I've watched this game one more time. He single-handedly kept Cleveland in the game. He was so awful. He looked like he forgot to play basketball. Not just like, I don't know what his stats were for shooting threes. The drives to the hoop with absolutely nowhere to go. Jumping in the air, no plan. He actually fumbled a defensive rebound out of bounds in the fourth quarter that people are forgetting about. I'm calling Sacramento and I'm saying, will you please take Jaylen Brown in your pick back so I can get the number two pick in the draft? I don't know, guys. You really think he wasn't, I mean, awful, awful, awful.
Oh, well, he was brutal.
No,
in that
he was
game.
Bad. He had a terrible game. But, I mean, you look at Rozier. I mean, Rozier was 2 of 14, 0 of 10 from 3. Jaylen Brown was 5 of 18, 3 of 12. And for the series, Jaylen Brown was your leading scorer. He averaged 19 a game and shot 44% from the field.
Look, he needs some improvement when it comes to his handle and his free throw shooting. But I still think, and maybe this is where I'm blind a little bit. Look, he was terrible in Game 7, especially in that second half. But I'm blinded a little bit because I see the upside of the player, I guess, you know, and I think that he is one of your building blocks, so maybe I'm just willing to give him a pass. But overall, yeah, no, a terrible Game 7 for him. Do you think just the moment was too big for him, Chris?
I think he probably got a little too jacked up, and, I mean, he did seem a little out of sorts, you know? And he got a little too jacked up, but I don't know. I mean, they just had a bad shooting night. And you know what's funny? We can blame it on youth and all these other things, but then the next night, the Houston Rockets go out and lose
27 straight that they
to the Warriors, and it's the same thing. And I'll tell you what, philosophically, the Rockets and the Celtics, at least when it comes to the three, because the Celtics don't do the ISO stuff that Mike D'Antoni does in Houston. But philosophically, when it comes to the three, the Celtics and the Rockets are kindred spirits. Like, they're going to keep taking those threes. They believe in the three. You take the three, you make the other team defend the three, and then on the other end, you take away the three. That's a big part of what those teams believe in. And it's the old, you live by the three, you die by the three. The Celtics just, at the worst possible time, had an awful shooting night from three, and they didn't adjust. And you can make the argument that in the fourth quarter they should have adjusted. I mean, I feel like, let's play through Al a little bit more. Let's post him up.
Get to Horford in the paint. Go to Tatum.
Yeah.
You know, that's those two games specifically, that Sunday and Monday night, Chris, like, I learned to dislike the NBA a little bit. Like, and maybe
really?
It's the Golden State Warriors' effect of too many threes. Like I said, live by the three, die by the three, the chuck and duck. Like, this is what it is now. My God, get in the paint, drive to the hoop. It's not a bad thing anymore. We'll continue to take your calls here. If you want to join us, we have one open phone line here, Sports Hub Celtics Show, 617-779-0985. And I promise we'll get right to your phone calls right after this. Some breaking Red Sox news. And it ain't good. Mike Sarge-Riley is going to get you caught up on that. And then it's back to you here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Terry Rozier, he's going to pull up and shoot a three. Got it!
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gordon felt like he was making great strides, getting close, but he still had a little bit of pain in one little spot. Persisted over the last couple months, and they felt like it was being caused by the hardware. The safest bet is him being 100% by next year. There wouldn't be lingering effects.
Celtics president of basketball ops, Danny Ainge, on with Toucher and Rich earlier this week here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Sports Hub Celtics Show. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you at 617-779-0985. He was talking about Gordon Hayward. Had, a bit of a surprise surgery. At least it was a surprise to me, Chris, to remove the plate and screws in his broken left leg, but he'll be ready to start next season. Do you question the timing of this? Were you kind of surprised, as I was, that he went under the knife again to get this done?
I mean, a little bit, but you never know how it's going to go in somebody's recovery. And, you know, I think that it's the type of thing where you look at it, and they just went through what they went through with Kyrie. If you leave that stuff in there, and obviously I'm not a doctor, but, I mean, if you leave that stuff in there, and it gets infected or it becomes the type of issue where somebody has to miss games. Better to just be safe now. I think they feel like they have the time now to just do this, and then he'll be good to go. But I think it's a better safe than sorry sort of situation.
All right, let's go to Paul in Somerville, who has some leftover thoughts on a Game 7 loss to the Cavaliers last Sunday. Go ahead, Paul.
You know, it's not so much that they lost, Jim, it's how they lost. With Rozier and Brown, who have been so good, just falling flat on their face. And as good as LeBron James was, I'm not taking anything away from LeBron, they could have won in spite of that. They proved that in Game 2 when he had a 40-point triple-double. And then watching the finals game with his collection of bums crapping their pants on the court, I can't believe we lost to those people on our home court. It's really frustrating. Real quick on Rozier, I don't see him getting moved. They're not going to be able to take back salary in any deal they make because he's on a rookie contract. I don't think teams are going to be interested in him for 1 year of team control.
Yeah, Paul, it is the way that they lost. They shoot 34% from the field, 18% from three in Game 7. That's it. Like, that's why you lose. And the other thing, too, the collection of bums that's surrounding LeBron James in Cleveland this year, it was the way that Jeff Green played, Chris. Not just in Game 7, Game 6, too. Like, Jeff Green.
He lost to Jeff Green.
Bum Jeff Green played great in those last couple of games. That's another thing that makes it so damn frustrating.
And the thing about it is, if you think about it, you're right, he did. But you lost to a team whose second best player was Jeff Green.
Oh, God. Kurt in Boston, you're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good, what's up?
Good.
All right, real quick. I think we are forgetting the value. I'm just saying median whole. I think we're forgetting the value that Jaylen Brown brings to the Celtics. Everyone is obviously remembering the last game, so everyone is excited over Jason Tatum. So am I. I'm really excited over him. But the leading scorer of the playoffs was Jaylen Brown. So for the idea that I don't know if you guys talked about the rumors yet, for us to trade him for a draft pick and get Mo Bamba, I think would be the biggest mistake, because if you look at the way the game is played, we need wing players, we need scorers. The game is not about having so many dominant bigs anymore. Obviously, you have Anthony Davis, you have Karl Anthony Towns. They're different, but that's not the norm in the NBA. I would love to get y'all thoughts.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't want to trade Jaylen Brown for Mo Bamba. I'm not down with that.
No,
I mean,
people were way too reactionary after Game 7. Look, he was bad in that game, but all of a sudden, and especially that next day, Chris, or Tuesday when we came in after the day off, people were like, oh, nope, ship him out, put him in any kind of deal. Can we get Mo Bamba and move up in the draft? Yes, Jaylen Brown should go. Like, everybody calm down. It was one bad game.
I mean, you know me, man. I'm like president of the Jaylen Brown fan club. I mean, I think he can be a really special player. If you're going to tell me, though, you're going to move him for, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, who's 22 years old, doesn't turn 23 until November, then it's like, okay, you know, okay, sure, fine. I mean, I don't want to see this guy go, but yeah. But, I mean, Mo Bamba? And look, maybe Bamba wound up having a great career, but I don't see that. And I don't think, again, to the caller's point, that that's today's NBA. I understand that there's a feeling that there's sort of a surplus of wing guys, and that's a situation with the Celtics. But again, you know, you go back and you look at teams like Golden State. You know, when Golden State had Harrison Barnes and they still had, you know, and Iguodala was healthy. In today's NBA, you can find a way to make that work. And I feel like as Tatum puts on weight, you know, he's a guy that can probably play small ball four. And in fact, that was one of the things the Celtics liked about him when they drafted him, is that they thought this is a guy that can play the small ball four at some point in his career. So I don't necessarily think that you have to. Just because Hayward's coming back, I don't think that means that someone has to go.
We were just talking about that surgery that Gordon Hayward had a couple of days ago to remove all that hardware from his leg. Chris in the car wanted to weigh in on that. Go ahead, Chris. You're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Hey, guys. So I'm actually an orthopedic surgeon, and I just wanted to give you my perspective on that. You know, I don't think the timing was strange in that his original surgery was 6 months ago, and you can't really go in and take that hardware out before that. So it's not like, even if they knew he wanted to have it taken out, it's not like they should have taken it out 2 months ago or something like that, because they really can't. There's a certain time period you got to let go by before you go in and take that stuff out. So the timing of it doesn't seem at all unusual to me. And I'm glad he got it out now, because the last thing you want is for him to have it bugging him next year. And they wouldn't have shut down his season to take it out, most likely, but he probably would have, you know, had some issues with it throughout the year. So the timing of it doesn't bother me at all.
All right, so Chris, now I'm in radio for a reason. I'm not the brightest bulb, so you can help me out here. I would think, so I hear this, and I'm like, well, isn't that stuff supposed to stay in there to, you know, help it all stay together? and keep it structurally sound. So why put it there in the first place? Is it so that, what, the muscle grows around it and that's what ultimately holds it? Like, because I find it odd that that even happens.
So you put it in there basically to realign the bone, and it has to stay in there to allow the bone to heal. But once the bone's healed, it's kind of along for the ride. It's superfluous at that point. So you don't always go back and take it out unless it's bothering someone. But a lot of times in these areas, like, you know, you think about your ankle, it's a pretty thin area that can rub, like it rub right in your sneaker there. So yeah. It can irritate guys. It can irritate the tendons. So at this point, 6 months out, there's no medical reason to leave it in. But so taking it out is perfectly safe.
All right, Chris. Thanks.
Right, good. Thank you for the education.
You can learn with Gasper and Murray as well. Huh? It's an educational experience. Ross in East Boston has some leftover thoughts on the Game 7 loss for the Celtics. Go ahead. You're next here on the Sports Hub.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So I've heard a lot of the talk and a pretty fair criticism, I think, of Brad Stevens, you know, maybe not using some of those timeouts when the Celtics really went stone cold in the second half of Game 7. I definitely agree with that. It's not a decision I personally agree with, but do you think they were...
Make
these young kids think their way out of a wet paper bag kind of deal? Like, let's make them figure their own way out of this. It'll be a good development kind of situation for them. You think that was going through the coach's mind at all?
I don't know. I'm not Brad, so I don't know what was in his mind. I think part of it was that they're at home. I think maybe if that's on the road, he reacts a little bit differently. And I know he talked about he liked the shots they were getting. They just weren't going down. Maybe you call a timeout and try and change some strategy, or you run a play for Al. The other thing that I think maybe factored into it, and this is just my guess here, is he knew what the situation was with LeBron. LeBron had played 46-plus minutes in Game 6, gets one day off. Now he's coming out. He's playing basically the whole game. I think maybe part of it for Brad was, I don't want to help them get rest for LeBron. You know, I'm not going to help out Ty Lue here.
Let's go quickly to, let's see, longest order of wait. Johnny in Brooklyn. You're next here on the Sports Hub.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up?
Good.
Sorry about your back, Murray. I hope you feel better.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much, though.
All right, so I want you to stay calm here, and just give me an honest take. Could this happen? Would you want to see it happen? Celtics trade for Anthony Davis, clear up some cap space, sign your man, King James, in free agency. Would you want to see it happen? Could it happen?
I don't know. I guess I'd need to steal a line from Jimmy Stewart and Felger. You'd need the cocktail napkin to figure out that and figure out the cap. Would I want it to happen? Sure. He's the best player on the planet. Still, that doesn't mean that your window is going to be as big as it is right now currently with the guys that I think they're going to be studs, if they're not already, and Jason Tatum and Brown. And you still have Kyrie Irving, of course. But yeah, of course I would. That would almost like guarantee you a title.
So I feel like it couldn't happen just because of the name you mentioned, Kyrie. Like,
well, right, yeah.
Kyrie's whole thing was get away from LeBron. Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe there would be some sort of reconciliation there. And they would team up again. I don't know, but that seems unlikely.
No, regardless, I'm happy with the team as presently constructed. I don't know if Danny Ainge is, so that's the question we're going to ask. Where does the team go from here, and will Danny Ainge make any major changes to the roster? He spoke with Tutcher and Rich about this very thing earlier this week, so we'll play some of that sound and take more of your calls here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is Kyrie Irving on the home of the Boston Celtics, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hopefully we'll have an expensive roster. I think that we've been managing the payroll pretty well up to this point, and we know that there's some really big, tough decisions going forward. In Boston, our ownership group has been fantastic, and they've been very willing to pay for teams that have a chance. And I think that the way that our team played this year, the hope that there is, I think that that will make it easier for them to step forward and realize the potential of this team and be willing to pay the money that we need to be as good as we can.
Celtics president of basketball ops Danny Ainge saying he wants the pricey payroll. And that was my bad. I thought that was with Tutcher and Rich earlier this week. That was actually after Game 7. But it doesn't sound like he really wants all that many changes to the Celtics roster. It's a Sports Hub Celtics Show. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you at 617-779-0985. And if that's how he feels, I'm with that. Like, I don't want to see any major changes here. I'd like to see them get some rebounding help. I don't want to see them blow it up like they did last year and make any kind of like major trade. I don't want to move Jason Tatum. And if he were going to try to get an Anthony Davis, if he was available, I think that, you know, rightfully the New Orleans Pelicans would want to have him in a return. So unless you can somehow maybe get Kawhi Leonard on the cheap, and by that I mean some kind of permutation of Terry Rozier, the Sacramento pick, your pick, as long as any of the young studs aren't involved there, fine. But other than that, no, I'm part of the Stan Pat movement, Chris.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Stan Pat movement.
Stan Pat.
Like
little okay. tweaks. Little tweaks.
Little tweaks.
You want to move on from Aaron Baines or Marcus Morris and then, you know, replace him with some other guy like them? Fine. But other than that, no major changes.
Yeah, I'd like to see Baines come back. They're in a little bit of a tough spot there in terms of what they can offer him. You know, it's only a little bit over $5 million. I think Baines might have a market, so we'll see what happens there. They have to make a decision on Marcus Smart. You know, what's going to happen sort of in with that scenario there, you know, as he goes into restricted free agency here? What do they want to do? What's he going to get? How much money do they want to give him? Do they
he believes he's a $12 to $14 million a year player. Is what he said after Game 7. Do you think he's think that's a fair assessment, or does he have
I think that's a little high.
Lacking self-awareness
there. I think he's an $8 to $10 million player.
That's, I would agree. That's
what I think. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, the one thing with the Celtics is they could make some sort of move with him, but it could be geared towards trying to get a salary number that then helps them get another player, you know, basically for matching purposes. You know, I'm not Mr. Salary Cap, but I know that's something that could happen. And then I think something to keep an eye on, too, would be, you know, what's the situation here with Marcus Morris? Because he already sort of hinted, right, that he didn't really see, like, how he fit in with Hayward coming back. He had comments and stuff. So is that, and that's a guy who's a very useful NBA player and maybe could be a piece that you put into a deal.
Yeah, I don't see how he's back. I think, you know, it was thrown around there during the season that he didn't really like being a bench player. Jimmy Stewart, who has his Celtics moles, has heard the same thing, and that he doesn't like being a bench player. So
we should get Jimmy on the phone for this show.
I know, right?
Yeah, we really should.
Look, if that's an issue, I don't see how that works. And that's fine. You know, there's games where it's like, man, like, you know, Marcus Morris is lights out, and then there's games where he's clearly costing you games. So if they moved on from Marcus Morris, like, I'm good.
Is Marcus Morris a get-the-F-off-my-team guy for you or no?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, he could come close, believe me. It wouldn't take much, Chris, to push me off. It wouldn't to push me into that area. But, no, I just, like, if he's going to ultimately be a pain in the ass and something that Brad Stevens has to deal with, like, in terms of a, you know, personality conflict or something like that, like, I'm good. Like, you can find another guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, I like what he gives you. I like the edge. I like the toughness. But if he's uncomfortable in the role and he's not going to be happy in it and he's going to be somebody who's disruptive, then you have to move on. So, you know, I think that the team could look a little different. You know, you might not have Baines, you might not have Morris, and you might not have Smart. I mean, that's a different looking team.
So what moves would you make? 617-779-0985, if any. Or are you just part of the Stan Pat movement like I am? Antonio in Haverhill, you're up here on the Sports of Celtics show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just want to say quickly, you know, it's already been decided locally and nationally that you can't say bad things about Al Horford. He's a championship player. I don't know why. He falls apart in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, every year he's been there. He's a good player. My take on him is, though, it's not an easy contract to move, but if you could, that would be very beneficial. If you could send him to Miami, even give up, we have picks, we have young assets. What if you get a Hassan Whiteside? We haven't had a big man defender rebounder since Kevin Garnett left. I think that way you could have Jalen, Jason, Gordon, Kyrie on the floor at all times. What do you think?
Chris, I'll start with you on that. Would you want to move on from Al Horford this offseason and just at least clear the money off?
I mean, who are your other bigs? I mean, again, you know, we do talk, it is a wing league, but you still need bigs. And
He's still more of a four than a five anyway.
He is, and I think he's also a good fit for what the Celtics do, and the coach loves him. The coach would not be thrilled to see him go. And if you're the Heat, you know, you're looking at a guy like Whiteside, he's 28, he's going to be 29 in June. Why would you make that deal?
No, I don't see that they would, even though he was at points playing limited minutes in the playoffs, and it sounded like he was being a giant pain in the ass.
Oh, that's true. But that's just Hassan Whiteside for you.
But Horford, you know, if we're being fair here, and I've called him the magician before, and he turned into it again in Game 6 and Game 7, he, outside of Tatum, was maybe their best player during the duration of the playoffs. Like, you saw what he brought. I know that Brad Stevens loves him. Like, he's part of this team, and I think he needs to be part of this nucleus here the next couple of years, especially next year, where they're, to me, the second-best team in the NBA, depending on where LeBron lands. But as of right now, no, I don't want him gone from the team. Is the money too much? Yes. Is he overrated at times? Absolutely. Let's go to Jake in the car. You're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hey, Jake.
Good afternoon, guys.
What's
hey,
up,
Jake?
I know I'm in the minority, but I firmly believe that Jaylen Brown's going to turn out to be a better player than Jason Tatum.
Now, I know Felger feels the same way.
Out of college. He was very raw coming out of college, and the book on him was needs a lot of work. And he's drafted him on potential. And the book on Jason Tatum was the most pro-ready guy in the draft, the highest ceiling in the draft, but his highest floor in the draft, but his ceiling wasn't quite as high. I believe Danny Ainge really wanted Josh Jackson, but that interview that went awry, he went to his second pick. B, I would trade anyone. I'd put anyone in a draft if we can get Anthony Davis and only Anthony Davis. If you watch that Minnesota-Houston series, Clint Capella ate Carl Anthony Towns up to the point where he couldn't get shots off. It was really embarrassing to watch that. And three, please let Marcus Smart go. This guy can't shoot a lick, but he thinks he can.
Oh, yeah, no, Jake, with that, you'll get no argument out of me. In terms of his defense and the tenacity that he brings, he's, in a lot of ways, I feel like he's the heart and soul of the team. But my God, stop shooting. I thought that would have, I really thought that would have changed, Chris, after that game against the Lakers where he shot them into a loss.
Oh, yes.
And then
yeah.
that night he punches the glass or whatever the hell happens.
Yeah, whatever,
I thought there would have maybe been a come to Jesus moment between him and Brad Stevens or maybe the brass of the Celtic, including Danny Ainge, saying, all right, no, we get it. We love what you bring defensively and on that end of the floor. Stop shooting. Just stop shooting. That conversation clearly never happened at all. So it's at the point where I'd like to have him back, but the money has to be right. If he thinks he's a $14 million a year player or he's close to what Draymond Green gets, like, he's out of his mind.
Yeah, no, I would agree. The funny thing is, Game 7, at least for me being there watching it, the plays that he was making, those little hustle plays, I didn't even realize until I looked at the box score later on that he was like 1-for-10. I didn't realize. I mean, I knew his shots weren't going in, but I wasn't like, oh my God, Marcus Smart's killing them out there. I was like, man, Smart's making those smart plays. So it's just weird like that. Like, looking at that game in a lot of ways, and he was still +2. It was like the quintessential Marcus Smart game. He's 1-for-10, but you're looking out there, and if you just don't look at, if you're not aware of the stats, you're like, no, he's helping him stay in the game.
Yeah,
he's making plays.
That's the Marcus Smart experience.
Yes.
We'll continue the Celtics conversation because I still see a lot of you hanging, and we'll get right to your phone calls right after the Hub headlines here. Some breaking news on Dustin Pedroia. Mike Sarge-Riley's going to get you caught up on that, and then right to you. And we'll continue the Celtics conversation here with Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.